This interview is with Larry Murray on December 26th, 1986. Larry was executive vice president of the State University Central Office. And I'm talking to him in his home at 8 Fairway Lane in Rexford, just off of Route 146. The sheet that we used was entitled Questions for Larry Murray, introduced as these questions are aimed at getting a clearer picture of the early thinking about the structure of the state university system, the location of the four university centers, and the special character of Stony Brook. We are trying to lay the basis for a brief history of the creation and rapid development of this particular university center into a nationally recognized institution. We are interested in answers to the questions who were primarily responsible for the creation and development, why was the task begun, and why was it carried through so rapidly? How was this accomplished? By what means was the job accomplished in the context of the governmental system of New York State? What were the major steps? When were they taken, and where? We view this oral history material as a contribution to the history of post-World War II public higher education in America.
I loved a lot of public television. I saw a series of programs on our public television station last summertime, fall, somewhere in that time, of the origins of music and the changes that took place in it from medieval times right through. I don't know whether you may have seen it on another
public
television
station. I didn't see it, but I don't know whether Drew did or not.
But it was a fantastically good program. Jeez, I really enjoyed it. And it talked about the contributions to music that had been made by the various churches. Starting out with originally with the chants and the Gregorian chant, things of this kind, and what that contributed to music, even though you wouldn't recognize that it had any influence. It did this, it did that, and how they managed to involve people of means in promoting things.
It was public television.
Yeah, it was a great series.
I'll tell you about it.
It was a great series. Yeah, it was on our channels. 17. WRG, not RGB, but NHT.
Right.
It was a good series.
Good.
So I go from all them kinds of things.
You're Irish by background?
Yeah. German.
I was in Ireland in September.
Were you?
Yes, for 2 weeks with friends, my wife's roommate in college, and we stayed with friends in Dublin and took a car and driver. Drove around largely the western part. We saw different parts of where W.B. Yeats, had lived.
Uh-huh.
And it's quite a fascinating country.
Well, you know, I've never been to Ireland. I've threatened to go on occasions, but one thing or another always kind of interfered. A fellow worked for me, a lawyer. His name was John Sauerwald. He's a German individual. His friend was an Irishman, and he persuaded John to go to Ireland with him on a tour. And I said, John, I don't think the country will ever be the same. I said, you know, you over there, that's going to shake the very foundations. So he came back with a couple stories that he said put him right in his place, because they took along their golf clubs, because this other fellow, along with John, was an avid golfer. And they went to this course, and John walked into the pro shop, and there was a little bit of an Irish bro sitting there. And John says to him, you know, beg your pardon, like he said, can I play golf? And the Irishman says to him, well, now you'd be the best judge of that, wouldn't you, laddie? You know? And John says, he didn't know what the hell to say. He put him right in the tube. So he said later on, they were in a pub having a drink of beer, And the bartender, they struck up a conversation, and the bartender, where they were from? They said, well, they were from Albany, New York. He said, my God, he said, what are you doing over here drinking this stuff? He says, you got the best bird in the world right back there in Albany. So he said, John says, geez, he says, I felt awful bad about all the money I spent to go over there. Your namesakes and find out that they had a different opinion as to why I ought to be there. What causes Stony Brook want to write a history or be involved in a history?
Well,
that's usually the poorest thing to do under most circumstances.
You see, we passed our 25th in 62, in 82.
82, yeah, you started in
57. And they didn't write anything at that time. And then we came up to the 25th on the Stony Brook campus, which will be next year. And there was a considerable amount of discussion as to whether there should be a history. And I offered to be helpful about the years that I was with them, and in the course of that, pointed out that various people were no longer around as sources of information. They finally shelved the project, but decided that they wanted to get oral recollections from people who had been key factors in the creation and development of Stony Brook.
Oh, yeah.
And put it in the archives, and then when they wanted to write the history, they would have that. Because I showed them my World War, Empire State at War, World War II, which I wrote for the War Council, and showed them that I had interviewed Lehman and Paletti and Ives and Hecht and a few of the others with a stenotypist at that time.
Yeah.
In order to get some perspective on the correspondence that I was looking at. I think that gave Jerry Shewell the idea that maybe this would at least be something that should be done.
Who's Shewell?
Shewell is now the new provost. Mm-hmm. He took over from Homer Neal. And he was the director of marine sciences. He's a scientist, but he's also a graduate of a small liberal arts college in Michigan, Alma College. And I think he is, seems to me to be a pretty good person. And as everybody who is new does, they try to get themselves oriented, and so he's asking a lot of questions of all kinds of people as to where Stony Brook ought to go now, which I think makes sense.
True.
So,
because to me, that's always been the purpose of education, was to ask questions, both the faculty and the students. You know, I spent a good number of years of my life as a newspaper reporter. I was trained to ask questions. And the amazing thing to me was that when I asked questions challenging anything, more often than not, you didn't have the answers. I remember at one point saying to a group of academic people, very learned, distinguished in their field, why do you need to practice schools? And the teacher education candidate. Yeah. Why? Well, everybody looked at one another like somehow someone was asking them to recall the dinosaur. You know? And didn't have an answer. I suggest that we get an answer. Harry Porter, who was then the provost in the state university, says, Larry, you're right. He said, we better get an answer. Herman Cooper says, yeah, we got to have an answer. You remember Herman?
Yes.
I said, well, today, Larry Murray's asking. Tomorrow, the budget office may be asking you. Or the legislature may be asking you. And we damn well better know. So, Harry, you and Herman get together and you give me a white paper on these schools. Months went by. A year went by. A year and a half went by. Finally, I said to him one day, I says, how's that paper coming on the schools? Well, Harry started to give that wry grin of his, you know. He said, Larry, he says, you won't believe this. He said, but we can't agree on why we ought to have them. I said, well, maybe you ought to start agreeing on why you ought not to have them. Harry says, well, he says, maybe that would be the way to approach it. So it wasn't long before we had some agreement on a plan to phase them out of existence. Okay, and of course, I threw in some language which made it justify their, them to start with, but that their purpose had long since been served, and the new and better ways, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, which was a public relations step rather than an academic step. But, so I think that it's good that this individual's asking a lot of questions about what ought to happen.
Yeah. Speaking of questions,
you going to make me go get my glasses?
Yeah.
Would that be enough time or somewhere?
I don't know how much time you've got. I've got all day.
I've got much time as you think you need.
All right.
Probably can sum up rather rapidly what I know about anything. Matter of fact, I can sum it up very quickly. I don't know nothing.
Certain amount of pride in the institution on the part of those who are there. And questions are largely factual. Mm-hmm. Some value judgments at the end, possibly, but they're largely factual. I think you probably think of others too that I've
not. Yeah, a lot of these questions. A lot of these questions, Carl, I'm not sure I shed much light on.
There was a retrospect, as some of us marvel at the amount of support that this, we got from the state in the developing of this particular university center. You think of the amount of money that went in not only to physical facilities, but to the library and the building of the staff and so on. Let's start with you. When did you first join the State University? And in what connection, and where did you come from?
Well,
You were with Frank.
I was a hard-working newspaper man for a number of years, covering the legislature, state government, politics. And I had a phone call one day from Frank Moore, and he was then the state controller. And Moore said, I'd like to talk to you about taking a position as my executive assistant and public information officer here in the Department of Water Control. And I said, well, I'm glad to talk with you, controller, but why are you interested in me? He said, well, because you seem to have a grasp of complex things. He said, you write about complex things like equalization and tax and debt limits, constitutional things of this kind, etc. And much more was deeply involved. His great affection in government was for things of that kind, but he had an overriding affection for the state university. He was on its first board of trustees. And so he had a dedication to it that was important. And that has to be kept in mind.
This was before he was lieutenant governor.
This was before he was lieutenant governor. This was when he was a state controller. And Don Dewey was the governor. A fellow named Joe Hanley was the lieutenant governor. And Moore headed up, as would be the case, various committees and commissions, some at the request of the governor, and others on Moore's own initiative. His own initiative took him into the field of constitutional tax and debt limits, and city-school fiscal relationships, construction of school buildings to save money, etc. The governor asked him to get involved in determining how much money teachers ought to be paid. And this was within the time period of 1947 on to the next 4 years or so. And so I had the conversation with Ray Moore, and one word led to another, and I went to work for him. I mention these other things because you have to realize what a broad depth of things, what a broad and deep area of responsibilities Ray Moore undertook for himself or was assigned. And that brought me into everything. So the fact that he was a member of the Board of Trustees and then subsequently chairman of the Board of Trustees brought me into the state university at a time when I wasn't connected with the university or on the university's payroll. But I was the individual who wrote for Moore, who represented him on many occasions, against whom he threw many ideas for soundboard, and all these things came in these various areas, including the state university. So I had an early on responsibility in the state university that was behind the scenes, as it were, as well as a responsibility for what Frank Moore's job was with the state university to assist him in these various areas. So I had a great deal more knowledge of and participation in the university. Besides that, as a newspaper reporter, I had written about the various events which led to the creation of the state university, because I was a reporter covering the legislature in the years when the university was being discussed, when it was being formulated, and when it was subsequently approved, which, as I recall, was 1948,
right,
when it had started. So this is what got me initially involved. I recall humorously that one day Herman Cooper had written some kind of a report on teacher education.
He was in the education department as associate commissioner for...
Yeah, but then he moved over to be the dean of teacher education in the state university system.
Oh, I see.
Okay. And Herman... Frank Moore suggested to Herman that he ought to review this written material with Larry Murray. Well, Herman kind of bristled and rebelled at this, but nonetheless gave me a copy of what he had written. So I sat down and talked with Herman. I said, Herman, well, why? I said, it doesn't have the answers that the controller's looking for, and it doesn't have the answers that a newspaper man is going to look for. We got to fix it. Well, we fixed that. That was my first real contact with an individual. Subsequently, Herman and I became great friends. He was an eccentric individual, but a good one, a competent person, and an individual who is rather rare in the academic world, in my opinion. He had the ability to say that he was wrong and to fix it, which is something. So, subsequently, when I went with Moore to the Lieutenant Governor's office, and this experience continued, and then we got involved in the creation of an organization called the Government Affairs Foundation, which was financed by Nelson Rockefeller, and Frank Moore became its director, and I went with Frank Moore for this purpose. Subsequently, when the...
Did that become the Institute on Government, the Rockefeller Institute?
No, separate and distinct. Yeah. It subsequently was discontinued after a number of years. It was an organization that served two purposes. One, it enabled Nelson Rockefeller to have an independent fact-finding organization assisting him when he was at that time Undersecretary of Health, Education, and Welfare in Washington. And it enabled Frank Moore to leave the Lieutenant Governor's job, which he abhorred, and take on this new responsibility, which would enable him to make a greater contribution to people generally.
That's with the State University?
No, with this Government Affairs Foundation.
Yeah.
Well, then, and I'm making this longer than it really ought to be.
But it
sort of indicates to you, I think, Carl, some of the background
that's what I'm after
that I had,
yeah.
That was in many ways unknown to many people who would say, who is this upstart, etc. I had a pretty deep schooling with Frank Moore and a pretty deep schooling in the newspaper business. And then subsequently, when Government Affairs Foundation was moved full-time to New York City, I declined to go to New York City. I was not one of them. New York City wasn't my idea of how to spend your years working or living. So I then was asked by an organization called the Temporary State Commission on Educational Finances to be a public relations officer for them. Abel Harriman was the governor. This commission was headed by Dr. Sly from Princeton. And this commission had a number of very outstanding individuals who had a great contribution to make to the study of educational finances in the state of New York. But as with many groups, they had difficulty corralling their thoughts into a concise kind of document that said what they wanted to say. And so, by accident, subsequently, it became my responsibility to write their report, which I did. And I said, one of the things that, in my judgment, was always important was to write reports so that they did not sit on shelves and collect dust. I don't need a...
That's characteristic of most reports.
It's a characteristic of reports, and it's deadly.
Yeah.
And it's largely because it's difficult to wade through them, and it discourages an individual who is not on a research program. But anyway, while I was there, this by way will come in later also, Carl. I was asked to come to the General Electric Company to consider becoming a General Electric manager to develop a government relations program for the General Electric Company, largely in the state of New York, but including other plant areas as well. And this was a period in which GE suddenly began to have a public conscience and a governmental concern, motivated by business, motivated by the fact that the business had not thrived as it could, and motivated, I think, also by the fact that this seemed to be a way of involvement with people that would be helpful to the business in the long run. And so I took on that assignment, And I spent the next 2.5 years or so, prior to coming directly to employment in the State University.
Can you spot the time?
That would have been from early 1955 until the middle of 57. No, November 57, when I came to the State University officially. During that time period, developing this government relations program, we had a great deal of success. I found that the General Electric management generally was far less informed about government and about how things in government happened than I had even thought.
Yes.
And some of the programs we developed at that time are still being practiced as they should be. But then one day I had a phone call from Jim Allen, who was the Commissioner of Education. And Jim Allen had been involved with us in many kinds of activities in the educational field, and he knew me and was a longtime friend of Frank Moore's and myself. And Jim asked me if I would come and talk with him and the Chancellor Cooper of the Board of Regents about becoming Assistant Commissioner of Education for Public Relations. So I went and talked to him. And after some discussion, I accepted the job. Since my relationship with Frank Moore was warm and friendly and respectful.
What was he just then?
Frank Moore at that time was no longer the Lieutenant Governor. He was still running the Government Affairs Foundation for Nelson Rockefeller. Moore was still the chairman of the State University Trustees.
Oh, I see.
And I called him as a matter of courtesy, in a friendly way, to say that I had accepted a job with the Board of Regents as a Commissioner for Public Relations. Well, this is a self-serving kind of a statement, but it sort of indicates how things happen. Frank Moore said, "We can't," meaning the State University, "we can't afford having you working for them," meaning the Regents. And I started to laugh. I said, you know me. I said, I call them like they are. I said, I think I can probably make a good contribution to both individuals through my involvement in this. So Moore said, "Give me 24 hours. I said, "For what?" He said, "If you're going to leave GE," he said, "I think you ought to go to the State University." Well, at that time, the university trustees, this was early fall of 57, had just finished promoting John Slocum from secretary of the university to another position, the title of which I'd forgotten offhand. Subsequently, it was titled the Vice President for Administration, something like that.
And where did he come from?
I don't recall. The position of Secretary of the University happened to be vacant. Moore had a discussion with the trustees, and they came back to me and said, "We want you to come to the State University as Secretary of the University, and we appreciate you doing this." Then I had to make a decision.
Right.
And this probably had a good deal this decision probably had a great bearing on what happened in the State University from that day on. The decision I had to make was, do I keep my commitment to the Regents and to Commissioner Allen, or do I stay with Frank Moore? Well, out of loyalty to Frank Moore, for whom I had worked and with whom I had worked for quite some time then, I decided that I would talk to Chancellor Cooper and to Jim Allen about it, and I did. Both of them were extremely gracious individuals, and both said, in effect, "Larry, we can understand your relationship with Frank. We think that perhaps you should do what your heart tells you you'd like to do, we surely want to have you here, but if you want to go with the university, we can understand. So then I talked with Frank Moore, who in the meantime had talked with the Chancellor Cooper and whatever. So the thing worked out anyway that I made a decision to go with the State University. And that's how I came to the university officially on the 1st of November of 57. And I stepped into the situation that for the next 8 years, 7-8 years was pretty unbelievable. Because of all the individuals involved in the State University, I probably had the most to do with its growth and development, and the most influence upon any part of the university trustees' decision-making process, because I was in a position to do that.
And, what month in 57?
1st of November.
1st of November.
Matter of fact, I was appointed, I was down in the Planning Fields, Dakota State. The Board of Trustees met at Dakota State Planning Fields in November of that year. And I was asked to be present, to be interviewed by the board, and subsequently was appointed by the board at that time to the position of Secretary of the University. Parenthetically, there's a story that makes me chuckle sometimes when I think of it. There was a mayor of Utica by the name of Boyd Golder,